But now, you know, and chill, and I'll do it over the holidays. I'm going to clean up that page on income and fix those bad links. But the links on this page are to the same things, and these links work. Now, Joe, let's back out of this, and I want to go through. I want to show our parties. I know, Peter, but tonight they're impeaching the president. And if you looked at some of the speeches, wow, man, the Democrats are crazy. But here's the thing I want to show. This is what I want the people on this program that are listening to this presentation tonight. I want you to understand something that is real simple. It's the history behind it all. And once you understand the history, then you will have access to arguments that you can make that are on a completely new level. You know, it's like, you know, I want to go ahead and say this right now. Personally, I like the commissioner's present definition of compensation for services, which in the best description of compensation for services out of his regulations is, oh, compensation for services, that's fringe benefits. Now, how do we get around to that point? Well, you have to dig into the old tax acts and regulations. So Joe, let's go back up to on this page. I want to kind of point out what is here. Okay. 1913. If you want to see the 1913 Act, you click on that link, 38 Stat 114. And it'll come up. And all of these acts are word searchable. Now, I have the Library of Congress now has links to, off its official site, links to specific individual acts of Congress. And so what I've done here is I have linked over to the LOC, Library of Congress. You can pull up the specific act of the Congress of the United States, and you can download it. And they're all word searchable. Joe, you take your cursor and just kind of highlight. See, it says acids. Can you make that blue?
Actually, I typed in citizen to see what happened.
Oh, okay. All right. Good enough. All right. Okay. Well, hey, just to make a long story short, all of this, you can download it, and it's word searchable. And, hey, doing word searches is something that's real important. And one of the word searches and one of the things you need to know is where is citizens used in these tax acts. But, Joe, let's get back out of this. So you can click on the 1913 Act right here. Here in 1915, 1916, this is when it goes to the United States Supreme Court. If you want the Bruce Shaver briefs, and if you want the decision in the Bruce Shaver case, all you have to do is click on it. Now let's deal with this section 1916 Act. You can click on that and it'll come up. So you can see here, starting with, let's see what you're pulling up, Joe. I guess it's the 1916 Act. Yeah, okay. Again, it's word searchable. Now, Joe, back out of this. I want to show, and then we're going to go over to the in lieu of page. On this page, you have access to all of the tax acts and all of the regulations. Now, about 15 or 20 years ago, nobody in the United States, except some crazy lawyer from North Alabama, was even interested in the old tax, old regulations. So I sat down and I copied those suckers. I went down to Cumberland School of Law down in Birmingham, where I went to school, stood in front of the copying machine and fed the dimes into the copying machine. And I made copies of all the old regulations, and we scanned them and we made them available. And that happened back in the early 2000s. But since that time, other people have seen the benefit of providing to the public the old regulations.
That's another impeachable offense.
Yeah, yeah. So on this page, you have access to every one of the old tax acts and the regulations that I scanned and are now posted on the internet. Now, Joe, why is all of this important? Well, there's a reason why it's important. Now, back out of this page, go over to the taxation page, and we're going to get into the section on in lieu of. In lieu of. Why is all of this important? Well, if you take a look at the current code, the 1986 Internal Revenue Code, where does that come from? Well, you go back into this act in 1986 and look it up. Well, how in the world was the 1986 Internal Revenue Code created? You go out and go back to the act, and that act that created the 1986 code just simply says, oh, the 1954 code is renamed the 1986 code. So the 86 code is nothing more than the 1954 code renamed. Now, what is the 1954 code? Well, in order to explain what the 1954 code is, one must first have an understanding of, well, what was the first code? The first code was the Internal Revenue Code of 1939. How did that thing get created? Well, let's go back to Joe. I want to explain that to our participants tonight. This is real important. And this is the reason why it's all interrelated. The court cases say you can read in reference to tax laws, you know, even if you're looking at something that's been repealed, that provides meaning to what you're dealing with now. And that is certainly true, but it is something that too many people want to, well, they're not aware of it, or if they are aware of it, they want to ignore it. But let's deal with the in lieu of feature. In 1913, Congress comes along and passes the 1913 Act pursuant to the Tariff Act of 1913, which contained the income tax in Section 2, you know, which is about 50 pages into the Act. Well, that Act was challenged after the ratification of the 16th Amendment. There are still people making arguments about, well, what does the 16th Amendment mean, which came up in the Bruchaber case. And Chief Justice White was a Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court at that time. He had also been a young justice on the Supreme Court when the Pollock case was decided, which was the case that was decided in 1894 that dealt with the constitutionality of the 1894 Income Tax Act, where the court held the income tax was unconstitutional because it was a direct tax, and that direct tax, the 1894 Income Tax Act, since it wasn't apportioned, it was unconstitutional. So in 1916, the United States Supreme Court comes out and holds, you know, in essence, they say, oh, well, the 16th Amendment provides no new power of taxation. That's point number one. And point number two, it says, well, in essence, you know, an income tax that is authorized by means of the 16th Amendment is an income tax that falls within the excise tax category. Well, when that Supreme Court decision came out, something that they had done with all these other tax acts, you know, Congress would come along like the boat tax came along in 1909. Once the Supreme Court says it's constitutional, Congress comes along and, well, we impose a tax in lieu of. Well, that's what they did with the income taxes. And I'm going to be getting into this in lieu of feature here, but it's real important to know when that happened. As a result of the Bruchaber decision in the early part of 1916, Congress comes along and they didn't do what they did with other tax acts. They completely repealed in October of 1916, when they came out with the Revenue Act of 1916, they completely repealed the 1913 Act. And this is something that most people don't know about. The reason they don't know about it is because people ignore the history of the income tax. So in 1916, Congress comes along and enacts the Revenue Act of 1916. Now let's go down here to the Revenue Act of 1918, Joe. This is where they bring in that in lieu of feature. Oh, Section 210 of the Revenue Act of 1918. That in lieu of the taxes imposed by Subdivision A of Section 1 of the Revenue Act of 1916 and by Section 1 of the Revenue Act of 1970, there shall be levied and collected and paid for each taxable year. So it's in lieu of the Section 210, the section imposing the tax, imposed the tax that was in lieu of the tax imposed by the Revenue Act of 1916. And you know that it's in lieu of right in the section that deals with the imposition of the tax. Now let's move forward into time. Roughly every 2 years, Congress would come along and, you know, expand the scope of the, you know, administrative features of the tax. But, you know, the tax remains basically the same. So they come out with a Revenue Act of 1921. And what does that act say? Well, it's in lieu of Section 210. In lieu of the taxes imposed by Subdivision A of Section 1 of the Revenue Act of Revenue Act of 1921. Can you move that up on the screen, Section 210? That in lieu of the tax imposed by Section 210 of the Revenue Act of 1916, there shall be levied. As you can see, going through all the years, 1921 imposed a tax in lieu of the previous tax. You get up to 1924, get that on the screen, Joe. In lieu of the previous tax. Now, all it takes is you can, Joe, click on the Revenue Act of 1924. These are good links.
Nope.
No. Okay.
Well, so how many articles of impeachment are you going to get?
You
got
to go back to the page that deals with, you know, the links to the tax acts and regulations, the first page. This one's got bad links too. But yeah, go back to the old tax. That's where you can get it all. But Joe, let's go back to the in lieu of. Okay, we were down to in lieu of. Go down to 1924. Okay, so when you're in the 1924 Act, Section 210 imposed the tax, but it was in lieu of the tax that had been previously imposed by the Revenue Act of 1921. 1926 comes along. Same thing happens. Section 210, in lieu of the tax imposed by Section 210 of the Revenue Act of 1924, there shall be levied, collected, paid. So you can see in the tax imposed section, it plainly says, oh, it's in lieu of. Now let's move into 1928. Ah, things change. Now they, you know, for between 1918 and all the way up to 1926, you know, the tax acts, they were all had the same section numbers. And that was one format. Starting in 1928, they came out with the second format for the tax laws. I call that the 1939 code format. And that format was in effect from 1928 all the way up through August of 1954, when they came out with a new format, which is what I call the format for the 1954 code. So you've only got three basic formats in the tax acts. And so with that in mind, you know, then you can know that all these sections are always basically the same number. So you can follow one concept, you know, like income or deductions. You can follow feature of the tax acts through all the tax acts. And it's real easy to accomplish. But when you start, things kind of get messed up if you're not watching closely by means of the Revenue Act of 1928. In 1928, they came along and they deleted the in lieu of feature. Now the tax, you know, previously the tax imposed section said, well, the tax was imposed in lieu of the previous tax. Now Section 11, this new format, Section 11 just simply says there is hereby imposed. Oh, but the in lieu of feature was still there. Congress moved the in lieu of feature down into Section 63 of the Revenue Act of 1928. So the in lieu of feature now shows up in Section 63. The taxes imposed by this title shall be in lieu of the corresponding taxes imposed by Title II of the Revenue Act of 1926, blah, blah, blah. So it's in lieu of. So let's move on into after 28. The next act is 1932. Section 11 imposed a tax, but Section 63 showed that it was in lieu of the previous tax. So, Joe, let's go down to 1938. Ah, there it is. Okay. So in 1938, Section 11 of that act imposed a tax in lieu of imposed a tax without letting you know that it was in lieu of, and you would have to go down to Section 63 to know that it was in lieu of. So the in lieu of feature was divided into two sections when you're in the Revenue Act of 1938, but it's crystal clear that the tax imposed by the Revenue Act in 1938 was the tax imposed in lieu of the tax imposed by the Revenue Act in 1936.
Larry, what's the most layman's way to explain the in lieu of? In other words, what it means legally?
Well, it's in substitute. It's you know, like they had a previous tax. You know, let's say in 1924 they had a tax. Well, in essence, when they come along and say in lieu of, you know, basically all they're doing is they're keeping the subject of the tax the same. And generally what they're doing is they're messing with the rate schedules. You can see that, you know, because the rates kind of always are changing in Section 11 or Section 1 or Section 210. You know, but that's, you know, when you take a look at the tax imposed section, you know, the rates are, as we've always known, you know, the rates are constantly in a state of flux, but the subject of the tax is not in a state of flux.
Okay, so Larry, to put it another way, the in lieu of clause does not change the substance of the enactment.
That is correct.
And it doesn't repeal the previous act. It basically relies on and incorporates
act. There's a rule of statutory construction. This is what the courts have to say, that you can take, you know, if you're dealing with one subject, even previously valid laws on that subject it's worthwhile to look at those to determine the meaning of the current law, because the past provides meaning to the current law. And that's one of the things you can find when you get into the study of income. But you can't understand the study of income until people understand this, how it's all connected, you know, by means of this in lieu of feature. So by the time you get up here we are in 1938. In 1938, the 38 Act was in, the tax was imposed, the tax imposed by the Revenue Act of 1936. 36 was in lieu of 34. 34 was in lieu of 32. 32 was in lieu of 28. 28 was in lieu of 26. 26 was in lieu of 24. 24 was in lieu of 21. In the Revenue Act, the Tax Imposed on the Revenue Act of 1921 was in lieu of the Tax Imposed on the Revenue Act of 1918, which was imposed in lieu of the taxes imposed by 1916 and 1917 acts. So there is this connection. In 1938, you know, if you really wanted to understand the full reach and scope and who was subject to the tax, you'd want to study all the acts. So now let's get into the 39 Code. You know, one of the things they started in 1926, they started the creation of the current United States Code, which at that time had 50 titles. I have an explanation of this also on my website. But they created the 50 titles of the code in 1926. And so Title 26, created in 1926, was the place where they were going to stick the tax laws. Now, there are a multitude of tax laws. You know, let's say by 1935, you had taxes on alcohol, you had taxes on firearms, you had taxes on tires, you had taxes on incomes. They were just beginning to get into taxes on employments. You had taxes on estates, you had taxes on gifts, you had taxes on, you know, white phosphorus matches. You had taxes on milk, you had taxes on butter. You know, there's a wide variety of taxes. But those taxes were all found in the statutes at large in various places. So in 1926, when they created the code was to be a codification of all the laws on one subject put into one spot. so that anybody, if you wanted to know what the law currently looked like in reference to one subject, you know, you could pull out a title and, you know, there you would have all of the currently existing stuff. So what they did in 1939, they wanted to stick all of the old, all of the existing tax laws, everything that was in effect at that time, in February of 1939, all of the tax laws were to be pulled out of the United States statutes at large, stuck into one act of Congress, and Congress would come along and enact into law that one act of Congress containing all of the then existing tax laws. And of course, if it was contained in the 1939 Internal Revenue Code, whatever was contained in the 39 Internal Revenue Code that had existed in some other previous tax act was repealed. So now let's get around to Section 22 of the Section 11 of the 1939 Internal Revenue Code that imposed a tax, you know, just like we had previously seen. However, when you try to, you know, you had a Section 63 of the 1938 Act. The 1938 Act went straight into the 1939 Code, and the 1938 Act had that Section 63, which provided the in lieu of feature. But guess what? Section 63 of the 1938 Act did not go into Section 63 of the 1939 Internal Revenue Code. So Section 63 of the 1938 Act still exists unrepealed today. And so that makes the tax imposed by the 1939 Act, which was the codification of the 1938 Act, that meant that the 1939 tax was a tax in lieu of the 1936 tax. It pulled up the 1938 Act into the 1939 Internal Revenue Code. So what you have in 1939 is all of the, which includes the income tax, all the tax acts then in effect were stuck into one act of Congress, and that one book was enacted into law. And for people to say, oh, there's some, I've been to Washington, D.C., I have been to the Library of Congress, I've been in back in the archives, and oh, let me go get it. I've got my own version of it.
Say, Larry, as you're looking for it, I would add to this, Congress does not repeal laws by implication. In other words, if they're going to repeal a law or a section of a statute, they express it. They do not do it by ignoring it.
We need some Jeopardy music.
Oh, I want to know what he's digging for. Oh, you got it.
When you go to the Library of Congress, you're going to pull out this book. And what Congress did is they, can you see this book? If you go to the, if you go to a law library and look at the statutes at large, you'll see this book on the bookshelf. When you go to the Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., and want to see the 1939 code, they will bring out this book. I know that because I've been there. And what you will see when you go to the Library of Congress, this one isn't signed, but you will find, you know, someplace on the, either the front cover or the back, the constitutional officers in the Senate and the House, they signed this book. And so did FDR. So it was planned from the very beginning, starting in 1938. They were going to come out with, and they printed these things ahead of time. And when the bill got presented to Congress, this was the bill, a pre-printed book. And nobody was going to change anything. Why? Because it had already been subject to discussion for many years. A whole bunch of people had gotten together, and they made it perfect. They did encompass the tax acts and stuck them into one act of Congress, and they printed it in a book, And they had a number of these books already ready. And this was the bill that went through Congress. And I know that is because this exact same book that I had in my hand, when I looked at it at the Library of Congress, it was signed by the constitutional officers of the President of the United States. So that is the 39 code. Well, what is the 54 code? Well, the 54 code is, take the 1939 code the way it existed in August of 1954. Take a pair of scissors and cut up the sections. A lot of the sections, cut up the sections into subsections. Now, when you do all that, you'll have a big old stack, you know, like cards. You can shuffle them like a deck of cards. You're rearranging the 39 Internal Revenue Code, but it remains basically the same, meaning, you know, the same features remain the same. You know, when you get back into the, you know, the committee reports for the 1954 Internal Revenue Code and look at, you know, what they say about each section of the 1954 code, they'll tell you where it comes from. And they'll basically say, oh, it's basically the same thing as the 39 code. Now, Joe, I emailed to you, and I think Mike wanted an answer to this question through the course of this proceeding tonight. I emailed a document to you, which is the beginning of Title 26 when you download it off of a government website. Can you pull that up for us, please?